Music City, Nashville, Tennessee.
Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right.
Yeah.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight. You probably figured this out by now, but this show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who just want to get a handle on how the music industry works.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't know what we're talking about.
No.
We've been doing this now for 10 years, and we still don't have a clue. But we are able to bring brilliant, smart, talented people in, pick their brains, and give you all the opportunity to join in the conversation as well.
Yeah. You can do some picking by going to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can like us and join in with the conversation right there. And you can also hit us up on Twitter, @TheMusicRowShow. Instagram, @TheMusic. Everywhere, @TheMusicRowShow.
Right.
Pretty easy.
Right. Hey, we are all over the musical spectrum tonight.
Yeah, we are.
Our listeners are going to be getting whiplash. hanging out with the lead singer, guitarist, and founding member of Christian metal band, Striper, in hour one.
Yep. And then we're going to be talking with former lead singer and songwriter of the hit band Mason Dixon, now a songwriter solo artist, Frank Gilligan, is going to be joining us in the second
Frank
hour.
Frank Martin Gilligan. Come on now.
That's right.
Sorry about that. Let's
loved his island, by the way. It was awesome.
Really?
Really.
Did you see how big he is?
See, I got that out of the way
right
now. Yeah, I know. Bad jokes out of the way right now.
Yeah. If I was that lucky. All right, let's get down to it. Hino, do the honors, please.
All right, well, you know what? Tonight, we've been doing the show for almost 10 years, and only once or twice has my wife ever asked to please come to the show, and tonight was one of those nights because of our guest here this hour. I said no, of course. You know,
good.
That. I mean, come on. What are you, nuts? We're going to rock out this hour with the lead singer of the award-winning arena rock band Striper, Michael Sweet. Striper was the very first openly Christian heavy metal band to gain wide commercial appeal and success, earning several gold and platinum albums along the way. Michael's also had a very successful solo career with a total, I believe, nine solo albums so far.
I don't know if it's that many. It may be, but I thought it was seven.
Well, there's nine on
nine.
iTunes.
I
so
think it's seven.
Unless one of them is the greatest hits or something. But he also had a nice run as the lead singer of the band Boston and guitar player
for
the
Boston. a little bleep, yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. So his latest album is called One Sided War, and we are thrilled to say, Michael Sweet, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Glad you're here.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Pleasure.
Something I know forgot to mention. Well, we didn't really know, but we have a surprise guest as well.
Yes,
as Oz from Striper is also here.
Oz was gracious enough to join me.
Nice.
And he's with us, and we were going out to dinner, and I said, man, you want to sing with me? And his first reaction was,
no.
I don't know.
You? And then, again?
And then he thought about it and said, yeah. So he's here, and we're gonna sing a couple Striper songs together.
Sweet.
What a treat. Well, listen, I got a warning for you, Michael. This is going to be probably the strangest, most disjointed interview, because I have so many questions from all different spectrums of your career. Normally we're a little more linear, but we're going to be all over the place with questions, so I'm sorry about that.
No,
but let's talk about the YouTube video and the new single release of Radio.
Right.
Because it's interesting, because there is a real connection to Michael Sweet of Striper and country music.
Well, I mean, there is. Not a lot of people know this, but I grew up around country music. I think even more so than rock music. More country than rock music.
Really?
My dad and my mom are big time country folks. They grew up singing and writing country songs around country music. My dad did kind of a rockabilly thing for a while. But yeah, country is their heart and soul. And because of that, I was raised around that. And I remember playing on my dad's sessions when I was a kid. I mean, I could hardly play, but I played. And
sure,
he was being a good dad and letting me play on him. And he penned a number one country song in 76, I think it was.
Really?
I called I Don't Want to Have to Marry You. And his songwriting partner at the time for a number of years was Fred Imus, which is Don Imus' brother.
No kidding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they wrote a number of songs together. How they met was they worked together for Southern Pacific Railroad. And they hit it off. And they both realized that they had the same, you know, goals and dreams and aspirations and all that stuff. And they wound up starting to write songs together, and they wrote a number one country song, which is crazy. And my song Radio is kind of mocking that a little bit in terms of not so much writing a number one country song, but a lot of the rock guys that feel that it's you just kind of snap your finger and yeah. It's simple to write a number one country song. You know, throw on a hat and cowboy boots and you're going to be a country star overnight, and it just doesn't work that way.
Piece right. of cake.
Nor should it.
Yeah.
And that's what the song Radio is about, you know.
Kind well, of I loved that. It. I played it for my wife, of course, you know, and we both just laughed hysterically because it's funny. It's a funny song. It's,
it well, is.
And the video is a lot of fun, too. I recommend that our listeners go find it on YouTube, Michael Sweet Radio. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. I loved all the extra guest stars you had in
oh,
it,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, Joel Hoekstra's in it. He plays for Whitesnake now.
Mm-hmm.
Formerly of Night Ranger, plays for TSO, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and he's done a lot of stuff. Really great player, a guy named Ethan Brosh, who's a local Boston Berkeley graduate. Great guitar player. A guy named Will Hunt, mm-hmm. drumming on it, plays for Evanescence.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And a number of other bands. And I have a bass player by the name of John O'Boyle, who's a local guy, but should be a worldwide, you know, household name. He's really brilliant. And then a 15-year-old singer singing on a song as well by the name of Mariah Formica. My wow. wife had suggested to me that I should work with her, and I thought, well, what about this album? You know, and invited her to sing on it, and she did, and the rest is history. She did a really killer job.
That's sweet. Great. Well, just over in your career, what's harder to write, a great Christian rock song or a great secular rock song? I mean, what's harder to write?
You know, honestly, man, I don't sit down and break down every song and think, okay, I got to write a Christian song, I got to write a secular song. I just write from what I'm feeling at that moment. And if I'm feeling like the song calls for, or I'm led to write the lyric geared towards God or Christ or the church or it, you know, ministry or that sort of thing, I'll do it. But if I feel led to write a song about my wife, you know, from a personal experience, I'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't really think, okay, this one's going to be Christian, this one's going to be mainstream. I never think about a song. I never break apart songs like that.
Okay.
I just kind of start writing, and what comes out, I either like it or I don't. If I don't like it, I'll move on to the next song really mm-hmm. fast. And if I like it, once I feel a riff or a lyric, I'll continue finishing and putting the final touches okay. on that song.
Well, of all the Christian rock songs that you have written over the years, I mean, were you freer in terms of, because my wife's a writer, she writes for the Christian market.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of limitations, you know, it's like, you got to yeah. do this, you got to do this, you right. got to say Jesus this many times, that kind of thing.
Totally.
Were you freer of that because of the format that you were writing in?
I think so. I mean, for people that know me, I'm definitely a bit of a rebel, and I used to tell the labels, you know, when they would literally come to me, and I'm this is no exaggeration, and say, you need to add the name Jesus more to the song.
Right.
And I would say, take a hike. Okay. I'm not going to do that because the song's written and that's my song and that's what I feel it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to get upset sometimes.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. You know, being on I was with a label called Benson. Back in
like
94.
Brentwood Benson?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And now I think it's Provident, owned by Provident. Mm-hmm. But back during that time, there were some really nice people that worked there, but I remember it was all about, you know, you got to do this and you got to do that. And I remember doing photo shoots and them saying, you know, you're looking too sexy, you know, don't do that with your eyes. And I thought, that's just weird.
I get that all the time. Yeah. Not.
No, you have a lot of people say, don't do that with your eyes.
I mean, if you're posing a certain way.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, I just did a photo shoot. My shirt was unbuttoned a little low. And even I thought, oh, that's a little low. But if I was with the Christian label, I guarantee you someone would have been there saying, hey, button that up to, you know, two more buttons. But and it's not to bag on Christian labels. But back during that period, I found that a lot to be the case. I don't know about now. Hmm. Maybe it's a lot more open-minded.
That's still the case from what I've read. Yeah,
I have no idea.
You said something so interesting. I'm going to back it up here when you're talking about the songwriting craft. something you're working on and it isn't really getting your attention, you said you move on from it as quickly as possible. Do you finish the song?
No.
You don't have that need to complete something you've started? No. And you just move on?
I move on. And it's usually pretty quick, like within 10 minutes, 15 minutes. If I'm not feeling a riff or a groove or something, it's like, okay. And then I might take that riff and rearrange it, rewrite it. And it's like, okay, there it is.
There it is.
That might happen. But I'm real, the way I write, it's very odd. I don't write in between albums. So it's not like I haven't written a song since I recorded One Sided War.
Okay.
Really? So you write for a project.
I write for a project.
Huh.
And the minute someone calls me, if you called me and said, okay, we want you to start on an album in 2 weeks, I'd start writing it right then and have 12 songs in 2 weeks and then go record those songs. I don't like writing. A lot of times you hear about bands and artists, they'll write 20 songs or 30 songs and they'll pick 10 songs from those 20 or 30 songs.
Right, right.
That's really weird to me because I feel like it's a waste of energy and a waste of time. It's like, to me, I know what I like and what I don't like. I know what's good and what's bad, and I'll shelve what's bad instantly and move on to something that's good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Instead of put so much effort into a song that's going to be a B-side that you're not going to pick anyway.
Right.
I just don't understand that. What a waste of effort and energy when you could be putting that into a good song. It seems odd, but that's just the way I do things. That's the way I think.
So let's say you're watching Netflix. and you pick an independent movie that you've never seen before.
Right.
And you're a half hour into it, and you decide it stinks.
Oh, yeah.
Are you able to just turn it off and walk away?
Ask my wife. I do it all the time.
Can he just turn away?
The time.
I can't do
within
that.
Within 10 minutes.
I end up having to watch the whole movie.
I'll look at her and say, this movie's garbage. You want to watch something else? And but she's more into it. She's like, oh, well, let's wait. And I'm like, I can't do it. I can't waste an hour and a half of my time watching this horrible movie, you know?
Interesting. Huh. I have to finish it. It makes me crazy.
So,
even if it's horrible, I have to know how it ends.
Have you ever been on a radio show and about 10, 12 minutes into it, you figure out
these guys are idiots.
Got up and
I'm feeling right now that something's really weird here.
No, but seriously, you say you only write when you've got a project to write for. Do you not ever, like most songwriters, get some idea at some point and have to write it down or go jot it down? Does that happen?
No. Yeah. On my phone, I am recording ideas all the time.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'm humming. You know, I'm humming ideas into my phone. I go home and I try to take that hilarious hum in the supermarket and turn it into a song. I've done that many times. I used to hum a song to my cat whenever my cat would walk in the room. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I did that for years. It became a song on one of my solo albums called Save Me. It's the guitar riff.
That's what the cat was thinking? Save me?
Maybe. but that became a song, and not only a song, I think probably one of the best songs on that album.
Really? Right.
So it's interesting, but my mind works really in very odd ways.
Huh. All right.
Okay.
30 years of Striper. That's awesome.
32 years.
32 years. Okay, well, congratulations. Congratulations. What do you remember about the inception of the band and maybe what your original goals were for yourself and the band?
Oh, man. You know, I think at that time we were so young. I don't know that we necessarily had like these deep-rooted, in-depth goals set. I didn't.
Right.
I was just enjoying the ride. You know, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, you know, deer in the headlights kind of mentality. And I just, we were taking it all in. It was like all new to us and going to Japan and Europe and, you know, touring the world and then buses and planes and, you know, going on tour for 6 months and all the stuff that we did. I think we were so young that it was overwhelming, but in a great way. But we weren't taking notes on, okay, let's set these goals. And now we do. Now we plan ahead, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now. But back then, I don't think we really did that. I personally didn't do that.
Interesting. Well, how weird was it that you were being called, you know, satanic devil worshipers while at the same time you're a Christian band? That must have been like a weird
thing. So strange. And I mean, yeah, we did things our own way and very different from everyone else at the time. But I mean, our hearts were pure.
Yeah.
And we 1,000,000% were sold out to God and wanted to please God. And you know, we were very serious about that and still are very serious about that. But to be back in 1985 and 86 told that we were satanic or we're wolves in sheep's clothing or we're not this or we're not that and have people picketing our shows that were Christian people, Christian churches. It was bizarre. It was crazy.
I mean, I don't even know how you respond to that. I mean, what did you?
They responded so well. I watched a video of you guys with an Australian preacher going back and forth and beautifully and with respect and kindness, you just kind of tore them apart. Well, you know, because it was like, well, have you seen a show? Have you been to? Well, no. Yeah. And have you heard any of the music?
Right.
Well, no, but I've heard. It's like, well, you know, maybe come see.
We'd always say that to everybody that would pick it or come against us. We'd always ask them, have you seen us? And most of the time they'd say no. And I just always thought that was very strange because how can you, you know, have an opinion about something or someone if you don't know what it is your opinion is based on? I mean, you don't know what they're about.
Yeah.
You haven't seen them. You haven't met them. You don't know their hearts. That's crazy to me. I mean, the old cliche, judging a book by its cover, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Did it help you, actually? I mean, because I know movie studios love a good controversy. That, you know, please pick at our movie. You know, that's the best free advertising you can get.
You know, it may have. I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, the local news would come out sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it helped us or hurt us or what, but, you know, we just kept doing our thing. It didn't sidetrack us from what we knew we were called to do. And we continued on, and we're still here. And many of those people that picketed our shows are not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't really need to say anything more than that.
Sure.
Those are the facts. You know,
sure.
We're still doing what we're doing, and God's blessing the band, and some cool things are going on. And, you know, there you go.
There you go.
We need to take a break. This segment's brought to you by Facebook, where people give opinions on things they don't understand all the time.
Shut it.
Okay, it's not Facebook. Our real sponsor this segment was Toyota of Cool Springs, right, honey?
That's right. George is the owner over there at Toyota of Cool Springs. Great guy, great dealership. You know, things, you know, from the head down, things come from the top. And that place is such a great, comfortable place to go to get your car worked on. I actually just did have my car worked on last week. They did a great job. They were really great about, okay, here's what you need to do. Here's what you can put off, you know, that kind of thing. And even fixed a couple things that were so minor they didn't even charge me for. So that, I mean, that's integrity right there.
Nice.
To me. So great dealership. You can find them on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. Go see George, the owner. He's going to take great care of you. Again, that's toyotaofcoolsprings.com. We're going to be back with more of Michael Sweet of the band Striper. We're going to get him to play a song for us right here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
Hold on, we gotta have a little more of this. We're here with Michael Sweet of Striper fame. This is a song off his solo record called Radio. What kind of headbanging music we always say here at WSN.
Right. Nice.
All right.
Such a fun song.
Again, great video. Go check it out on YouTube.
Absolutely. And that's that's the first single release, right?
That was like the second single release, I believe.
Okay.
But I mean, for guys like me, single releases, you know, it's not like I've got this radio campaign, we're beating down doors. We just kind of throw it out there and all the fans rally around us and, you know.
Nice.
Does what it does.
Sweet.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say we got Oz also here joining us.
Yeah, say hello, Oz.
Howdy.
Howdy. And we twisted their arm into playing us a tune here. So what do you guys feel like playing?
We're going to do a little medley of two songs.
Sweet.
Two Striper songs.
Okay.
Not solo songs. One is called All for One, and the other one's called Lady. And we're going to merge them together.
Sweet.
Make them one song. So do you guys want us to perform these songs
now? Go for
it.
And the one.
Okay,
the
here we go. Us out there. Take a look around and won't you tell me what you see? Is there love to be found in this world's pain and misery? Just can't seem to make you mine, no matter how hard I try. Never wanted anyone more than you know. God, I'm hoping that you want me to. Something new, it's tearing me apart. It's got to be about 10 o'clock for me to sing. 10 p.m. Tip jar right over there?
Oh, man. Well, it's 10 o'clock.
It's too early,
right?
Man. I really meant that when I said that.
No, I'm just thinking that the PD turned on the radio a few minutes ago and went, what's going on?
Actually, our program director emailed me a couple of days ago because he might have to come apologize to you. Apparently, when he was on the air a few years ago, he karaoke'd you or something like that, right? he sang karaoke to one of your songs, and I guess butchered it. So
that's hilarious.
But also a big fan, our program
director.
Well,
you know what? That amazes me because we run into people all the time that we would never expect to be fans or have been fans that are. Or were, and it's just crazy to me. So it's cool to hear stories like that. You know, your PD is a fan. It's very, very awesome.
Well, and I can't speak for Hino, but I was a huge fan of the whole hair band that arena rock phase.
Sure.
And so I'm curious about just the songwriting community, if you can. Describe that community that was Hollywood in the 80s. Did the bands all know and support each other? Was it super competitive, or were you guys all kind of lifting each other up?
I think the bands, at least from what I recall, the bands definitely somewhat supported each other. I mean, there was competition.
Of course, sure.
You know, you were trying to always be the best and be better and have something more, and that was always there. I think that's been there since the beginning of rock and roll.
Sure.
You know, back in the 50s, people going up and saying, hey, you know, I'm gonna one up you after I go on after you, you know, that sort of thing. You hear stories like that. I think that still exists and always will, but there was definitely camaraderie. There was definitely friendships. People would hang out and talk, and it wasn't we didn't separate ourselves, you know. Mm-hmm. We'd play with Rat at Gazzari's and then go out and hang out with Rat after the show and talk and have a drink and hang out and talk music, and we were buddies for sure.
Well, in general, though, was there any sort of weirdness at all because you guys were at least thematically different from the other bands?
Well, back then we weren't.
Oh, back then you weren't.
Because when we were playing Gazzari's, we were a band called Rocks Regime.
Okay.
And we weren't singing Christian lyrics.
Gotcha.
We were singing just straight up, you know, mainstream, secular, whatever you want to call them, lyrics. And we were a little bit odd in the sense that we had the yellow and black going on.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we got made fun of for that. I remember people making comments to my face about it and thinking, oh, okay, whatever. But we had our own thing.
Yeah.
And you know, once we changed the lyrics and became Striper.
What was the turning point that caused that?
Well, that was back in 19, we started thinking about that in 83 and into 84. And it just started with the, you know, we all grew up in Christian families for the most part.
Yeah.
And around church, around God, knowing right and wrong, good and evil, all that stuff. And then a friend of ours by the name of Kenny Metcalf had given his life to God and to Christ, and he came into our rehearsal studio one day and started sharing with us, and then came again, and it kind of started there. You know, the seed was planted from him to, you know, kind of devote the band to God, and you know, I think it was always already there,
because
we knew what was right and wrong. You know, we didn't. I remember even as a kid when I was 13, 14 years old playing Hollywood clubs, I felt weird about it. I'd have a drink and I'd hang out and I had a girl, you know, and all that kind of stuff, doing that whole scene. But it always felt deep down inside wrong.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the turning point was when Kenny started coming around, and then, you know, eventually some other people, and a guy by the name of Michael Guido, who travels with us to this day. He lives here in town in Nashville. He's a pastor for a lot of bands. And, you know, it just started evolving, and we just said, we're going to do this, and we did it.
What kind of conversations were you guys having as a band? Like, all right, this has never really been done before. What are we doing?
Yeah, no, look, there was some nervousness for sure, I think, with all of us. We all wanted to do it, but yet at the same time, we were apprehensive about it, you know? And I understand that, because we might not have known it at the time, but you know, when you make a stand for God in the world, you're gonna take fire, man. You're gonna take heat, and it's gonna get intense. And, you know, we might not have said that out loud, but I think maybe inside we knew, like, oh, gosh, this might be tough, or this, you know, we're going to get a lot of flack, or this or that. But, man, we just did it because we felt that was our calling and we were supposed to. And we did it, and we had a circle around us and support around us, and we made the choice, and here we are, man. You know, 32 years later, awesome. We're still doing it. We throw out Bibles. We don't do it in a go-to-church way. A lot of Christian bands, you'll go see them, and, you know, they'll break out a Bible and preach for 20 minutes or whatever, great. Great, don't get me wrong. We don't do it like that, though. Yeah. It's a rock show. When you see Striper, it's a high-energy rock show, but we take you to church lyrically, and we throw out Bibles, and, you know, we try to inspire and encourage people to follow God and let God lead versus the opposite.
Sweet. Wonderful.
Did you just say sweet?
Unintentionally.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're here with Michael Sweet of Striper, and got to hear Oz play some guitar there, too. So stick around. We're going to be back with more. This segment was brought to you by Yes Master. Now, after you have something recorded, trust me when I say you have to get it mastered, even if you're not, even if you're not looking to put it on the radio or anything like that, it makes such a difference.
It makes a huge difference. And I didn't realize it until the first time I got something mastered with my wife's project, what a difference it made. So
yeah.
Go check them out. YesMaster.com is the website. They work with everybody from Grammy award-winning projects right down to songwriters like Scott and myself. So they're definitely worth checking out. YesMaster.com's website. We're going to be back with a whole lot more of Michael Sweet here on the Music Row Show. So come on back. All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. Not too often you hear some double bass pedal and
that's
streaming
a nice
guitar on WSM.
Song.
Yeah, we're here with Michael Sweet of the band Striper, and that's off of his solo project. That's a song called Bizarre.
Hey, how do people find your music? Obviously, iTunes and stuff. Can we buy it off your website?
You can get it at the website. You can get it at Rat Pack Records, this album. .com. You can get it at FYE, Best Buy, supposedly at Walmart and all those kinds of places, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, and we were kind of talking about this during the break, too, with producer Logan, but your type of singing is considerably different from our typical Nashville guest.
Never noticed that.
Really?
never noticed that.
What kind of measures or training or exercise goes into maintaining your voice? Because you still sound just as strong as I remember hearing you 30 years ago.
Oh, man. You know what? But I really don't have any exercises. I do have a couple of things that alter and kind of hinder, I should say, my abilities in terms of range and whatnot. I have post-nasal drip really bad. And the only thing I can do is take decongestants for it to help, but they actually dry me out, sometimes make it worse. So it's a never-ending battle. And then I have some some issues with my thyroid and whatnot, and I can feel the pressure from that on my vocal cords. But I'm very blessed to still have the ability to sing the songs mostly like they used to be. Not mm-hmm. exactly. But I can still go out and sing them, and I'm very blessed to have that. I don't have any techniques. I drink throat coat, try to take care of myself, try to sleep, try to, you know, not get sick. When I get sick, I'm in big trouble.
Yeah.
Because it goes right here to my throat, and then we cancel shows, and it's never good. But, man, I don't know. I'm going to start wearing those masks on the planes that you see everyone in. Look creepy and weird and all that good stuff. But if it keeps me from getting sick.
You're going to go full Michael Jackson.
Absolutely.
All right.
Black mask, though. Not the white one.
Not the
not
white
the
one.
White
no,
one.
No, no, no. Well, you have a great book that you have out called Honestly, My Life and Striper Revealed. Great book. Very well received. There's a great story in there regarding a piece of gum on your shoe.
Can
tell us that story.
Well, it wasn't a piece of gum on my shoe. It was what I thought was a piece of gum. We were in Australia playing, and there was this pirate-looking fellow at my feet who was really rocking out and getting into it. And I remember thinking, that guy's cool, you know?
In the audience.
In the audience. Okay. Right front row in a big arena, big crowd. And about three or four songs later, I notice he's not rocking out anymore, but he's like yelling and frantic and really upset. And he's pointing and pointing and yelling, and I'm trying to play. and I'm like, you know, hearing him yell above the music. And I finally look down at what he's pointing at, and I see what I thought was a piece of gum at my feet. And I reached down and flicked it. And when I did, it was like a marble. It was hard.
Oh.
And then I kept playing, and then I looked down. I hear the guy yelling, and he's holding his eye socket open, and there's no eye. So it was a glass eye.
And, and
then for the rest of the show, he was swearing at me, and you know, it was weird, man.
He was headbanging so hard that his eye flew out.
He was headbanging so hard his eye popped out. I mean, seriously, and it's funny, but his eye popped out, rolled over by my feet, and he was trying to say, "Hey, give me my eye back, you know, you gotta have my eye." And I flicked it, and that was it.
Frank yeah. Martin Gilligan, has that ever happened at one of your shows?
No, never.
Exactly.
He said almost exactly. Wow.
Let's take one. In Colorado. Let's take one last break. We're going to be back with one more segment with Michael Sweet. You're listening to the Music Row Show. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. Our guest here is Michael Sweet from Striper. You're probably wondering, why are we playing I Don't Want to Have to Marry You?
Well, if they listen.
Jim Ed Brown. That was a song that Michael's dad wrote that was a number one for his dad. That's awesome.
How about number that? One, man.
Number one.
That's
number
crazy. One. Yeah. Before the break, we were talking about your autobiography. What will surprise readers and what surprised you about the process of putting all of that down?
Oh, man. Well, I started having regrets when I got into it because I realized how exhausting it was mm-hmm. to do it, number one. And number two, how difficult it was to write a book about your life and the stories of your life from the heart without throwing people under the bus. That was hard.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because a lot of those stories weren't good stories. Necessarily okay. for what people might expect from me. But at the same time, in telling those stories, it involved my mom and my brother and the band. And, you know, so it was tough. And there was a lot of stuff that I was, you know, talking about and as I was being interviewed and whatnot that I'm like, no, I don't want to put that in there. It was just too much. You know what I mean? And so that was the difficult part about writing the book is not being mean-spirited, but being truthful, as the book is called, Honestly. I wanted to be honest. I didn't want to whitewash anything. I whitewash my feelings, because it's my book.
Right.
You guys understand what I'm saying? It was just hard. That was the hardest part about it.
I've thought about this before when other people have come in who've written books.
Yeah.
I don't even know, how do you remember? I mean, if I can't remember what I did yesterday, let alone 20 years ago, you know, or whatever.
Well, I joke about that all the time. Look, everyone has a different perspective on the stories of our lives.
Sure. Right.
You go to Oz and hear his story of something in 1985, it's going to be one story. Then you go to Robert, it's going to be a totally different story. Maybe not totally different, but it's going to have different...
Same event, but different story.
Same event, but it's going to be different. Well, Oz will say, well, Mike and I, and Rob will say, well, no, Mike, I don't remember you being there, bro. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
The glass eye is still there.
And then you go to Tim, and then it's going to be a totally different story. Well, it wasn't on that day. The date was, you know. And that's just how life is.
Right.
Everyone has a little different... you know, viewpoint of how things are remembered and whatnot. But man, I tried. It was tough. It was a very difficult thing, and it took a lot out of me. And I read it and I think, oh, I wish I had done this or said that or not said that, or, you know, some of the editing is, you know, but I think it's a pretty good book. People seem to enjoy it. And the thing that gets me the most, blesses me the most, is when people say that they got something good out of it. And it blessed them, and it helped them. That's really cool to hear.
Awesome. Excellent. Okay, where do we find the book?
Well, it's kind of hard to find right now, man. I know you can download it at Amazon, like, instantly right now. And hard copies, there's a few copies out there. And when they run out, they order more. But, you know, it's definitely a difficult book to find, for sure. Yeah, it is. Because it's not through a real publisher. It was released through a record label called Big Three, who kind of released it on their own with the, you know, best way they knew how, really. But okay. It wasn't through an official book publishing company. Yeah.
Interesting.
This is brilliant, because then they're going to be these great collector's items because they're going to be so rare.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. But, you know, a lot of people have it. I mean, it did really well. It did fantastic. And a lot of people bring it through the line to have it signed and whatnot. So it's cool. I mean, I see it a lot.
So what about if we go to your shows? Do they have any at the shows?
They don't have my book at the shows. No, okay. But we do have, you know, we throw out Bibles at the shows. And are we going to be giving away Bibles, Lise, to some?
No, it's for donation.
For donation. Okay, right. But no Michael Sweet books at shows.
Okay. Okay. Do you ever get asked to autograph one of the Bibles?
Oh, yeah.
And is that weird? I mean, do you do that?
I shouldn't say it's weird. I think maybe when we first started doing it, it might have been. Now we're used to it.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's just paper. I mean, it's the Bible, but
Yeah. You're not like, I wrote that.
You know what I mean? You know, I get a little more weirded out by signing money because that's illegal and people ask us to sign money all the time.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know it was illegal.
Yeah, to deface money, technically.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
Interesting.
You can go to prison for life.
Hey, really? Scott, sign this.
Like you have any money.
Yeah, really.
The death penalty in Texas. Oh, yeah. If you sign money.
Really? Third strike.
Oh, that hurts. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, man.
MichaelSweet.com is the website.
MichaelSweet.com, Facebook. It's Michael Sweet Striper, I think, Facebook and Twitter. I'm not sure what it is on Twitter. I think Michael Sweet, right, Brian? You know, something like that. Michael H. Sweet. And thank Oz for coming and joining us.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much.
He didn't do any talking today, but he's over there and he's here. And we are rehearsing in town. So
sweet. Sweet. Awesome. Well, listen.
Would you stop saying
I know. It's just a habit. I'm sorry. But thanks again for joining us. We got another great hour of the show coming up. We got songwriter and former lead singer of Mason Dixon, Frank Martin Gilligan, going to be joining us here on the Music Row Show. So come on back in just a few minutes.